That Metal Interview.
Our guest for this episode of That Metal Interview with myself, James, is none other than Kevin Martin of the tremendous band Candlebox, which are to release a brand new album by the name of Wolves on September 17th of this year, 2021. The album is to be named Wolves and is to be released on September 17th. So you guys can go ahead and pre-order it. Go to their website, candleboxrocks.com. I believe if you forget that, I go ahead and just search Kevin Martin or Candlebox on social media, and you can find those links on there. So Kevin Martin is our guest, and they have a brand new single that we are spinning on J-Rock's Metal Zone, our radio station, a radio show, jrocksmetalzone.com. And My Weakness is the latest effort by Kevin Martin and the gang, Candlebox. And sometime last year, they released another single by the name of Let Me Down Easy, which is co-written by Chris Cornell's brother, Pete, along with Kevin Martin, of course. So check that out also. So they got some good songs out there. They got some badass music. Candlebox did not die or end or finish in the 90s. These guys have kept on rolling and kept the train going, and they got some badass music. So check it out. And check out their latest one, of course, My Weakness. And so here is our interview with the great Kevin Martin of Candlebox. Enjoy. Let's start with the new single, My Weakness. That's the brand new single, right? Very, very cool jam. We're spinning it on our online station, J-Rock's Metal Zone. Brand new album coming out, Wolves, September 17th, correct?
Yes, sir.
Can you talk to us about this long-awaited record?
Too long awaited. Right. We finished it. I finished vocals on it in January of last year, of 2020. And then, so we had recorded the record in August of 2019. And then I took like 4 months to work on the lyrics and melodies and stuff. Because I kind of felt like I wanted to make sure that the songs were, you know, pretty much close to perfect, rather than a lot of times what I do is I tend to do what Dave Grohl does, where I get in the studio and I let the song kind of speak to me, and then I write the lyrics during the process of recording. And with this one, I wanted to spend more time focusing on lyrical content and melody, because I wasn't really prepared to do that in August of 2019. Yeah. Excuse me. So I spent 4 months writing the lyrics, and then I went to Houston in January of 2020 to do the vocals with our producer Dean, and we just Airbnb'd a house. We set up a studio in the house, and over 4 days we tracked 12 songs, and just had a really good time doing it. And then the process was, at that point, you know, we'd already started working on artwork and everything to release the record in August or September of 2020. So that all got shut down a year ago today. Yep. And so we contemplated, you know, do we shelf the record? Do we wait to release it in the, you know, January of this year? And, you know, there were a lot of conversations that happened between March and September of last year, and the consensus was, let's release the lyric video for Let Me Down Easy, which is a song that I did with Peter Cornell, which would kind of, I think, to tie people over for a little bit, and then, you know, the hopes was to release two or three more by January of this year. And again, with all the kind of trappings of music and things that were happening in the industry, October, November, December of last year, we felt that maybe it was best to wait until March to release a new kind of single, and then the release date coming up September 17th. So, you know, it's frustrating as an artist. Yeah. But, you know, you're at the liberty of whatever labels that you're dealing with, and also distribution, and, you know, these companies that put your CDs out and produce the vinyl. You know, you you want it out instantly, and a lot of times it's really what the schedule is with the people that are, you know, helping you to release this. So that's why September 17th is the release date. But, you know, I think, God, we've been waiting as long as everybody else to get this fucking thing out. And
yeah.
And now, you know, we have a date. So we're excited. And we're also excited to know that the touring's going to be happening again in the fall. And, you know, fingers crossed none of this, you know, gets fucked up again.
Oh, wow, nice. That news right there. Cool.
Yeah.
So what's behind the title Wolves? What's the story behind it?
Well, I think, you know, for me, you know, the last 4 years of the Trump presidency really brought out, I think, the worst in everybody. You know, like him or not, you know, it's certainly just my opinion. But I felt that there was, you know, obviously, and I'm not the only one, there was this ginormous shift in, I guess, you know, the psyche of society. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, there's these lone wolves, and there are these packs, and the pack mentality of you know, cancel culture, and or, you know, attacking, you know, Black Lives Matter, or, you know, attacking Blue Lives Matter, and all these opinions, and all these, you know, kind of, you know, in my opinion, ridiculous statements, you know, not only physically, but politically and emotionally. And, you know, people just, I felt that everyone has kind of lost, you know, lost direction. And wolves are a very interesting species. You know, the pack leader is not always the one in the front. You know, generally they follow the pack. They are the one who protects, you know, the alpha male protects the pack itself. And that seemed to have kind of dissipated in, and I felt that in society, that we weren't lifting one another up. We weren't, you know, praising one another. We weren't pushing one another to be great. We were pushing one another to be destructive, and we were forcing one another to answer for things that we didn't need to answer for. And that's kind of where this kind of title Wolves came from, and that that lone wolf mentality of I'm just going to do what I want, and you know, whatever the consequences, I don't care. I fear them not. And so that's where the title came from. And it also, you know, the record is, for us, it's fearless, because we didn't stop ourselves from doing what we wanted to do, or a direction we wanted to go. So that's why you have a song like My Weakness, you know, against Let Me Down Easy, which is this swampy, bluesy rock track, where My Weakness is very much, it was written around the concept of 80s pop, Bryan Adams and that sort of thing, these kind of great, hooky, catchy songs that I'm a, you know, huge sucker for. I love, you know, I'm not ashamed to say I love Bryan Adams. I don't think he's written a bad song.
Great music, great music.
and they're epic tracks, you know, and that's kind of why, you know, this record, you know, also why I chose the name Wolves, is because there's an individual species in every single one of these songs. When the record comes out, I think people are going to find that there's something for not only everyone, but you know, there's certainly an awful lot of this band's changing members and directions over the past 20 years that are reflected in this album.
Speaking of Bryan Adams and different bands, I heard you're a huge Midnight Oil fan. Is that so?
Yeah, that's how I named the band. Yeah,
that's a little bit different than the genre of rock that you play, huh? A little bit different.
Well, you know, I think the interesting thing for me is I grew up listening to all kinds of music, and you know, I had an older sister that turned me on to punk rock and new wave, and an older brother that turned me on to metal and prog rock, and then and another older brother that turned me on to kind of the European pop dance music, if you will. So, you know, there was always something different in my world. And then my father was a jazz musician, and we listened to a lot of jazz around the house. My mother was into gospel and R&B, so we listened to a lot of that. So I was always kind of influenced by, you know, my surroundings. But Midnight Oil, you know, for for me, as a child, I've always had an affinity for Australia and things Australians. A lot of my favorite bands were Australian bands like Pere Ubu, Hoodoo Gurus, excuse me, Split Ends, who are from New Zealand. But I found Midnight Oil when I was about, maybe 15 years old. And there was this, I think it was the conviction of his stance as a political opinion maker, if you will, Peter Garrett, an incredibly talented human being, and you know, great respect for the Aboriginal community, and this is somebody that was fighting for them, and I found that really interesting. I'm also, you know, I have great affinity for the Native American tribes, which is why we wrote a song years ago called "Pull Away," which is about the book that I read called "The Trail of Tears." So I have always kind of been from the underdog, and Midnight Oil was one of those bands, and Peter Garrett, of course, that kind of brought that out of me. And then I went to see them on my 18th birthday in Seattle, and he was so commanding and so incredibly demanding as a performer, not only on his band but on himself, that it just kind of solidified that for me. You know, this great talent and this incredibly gifted band, brilliant musicians, just great performance.
Now, I understand you were a drummer before you turned vocalist. How did that happen? Who inspired you to drop the drums and pick up a mic, you know?
Well, I was asked to do some demos by a friend of mine named Rick Vaughn. That band actually was Scott Mercado, Rick Vaughn, and Perry Alfernas. And they were writing songs and asked me to sing for them. And, you know, I was like, you know, I'm a drummer, not a singer, but... that became a band called Uncle Duke, and then Rick left, and Pete joined the band, and we became Candlebox, and then Perry left, and Barty joined the band, and that was kind of the story there. I was stuck with the job. I've always tried to go back to playing drums, but, you know, I guess that when the band, you know, started progressing musically, it felt as though this was kind of my calling, being a lead singer of a rock and roll band.
Yeah.
I still, you know, every chance I get, sound checks and whatnot, I sit behind the kit and I play for at least a half an hour a day. But, you know, it certainly helps with the rhythmic element of writing songs and lyrical inspiration as well, because I'm pretty systematic when it comes to syllable count, when it comes to, you know, each line of a verse. So, syllabically, it's got to fit, and being a drummer helps with that lot, because there's all sorts of
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
If you love good music and good podcasts, you'll love Roots Music Rambler. I'm Jason Falls. My co-host Francesca Folinazzo and I talk to the singers, songwriters, musicians, and more in Americana, alt-country, bluegrass, folk, blues, and beyond. We share our own takes on the latest news in the space and recommend new music for you to explore every episode. Come get to the roots of the music you love. Find us at RootsMusicRambler.com or go wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe to Roots Music Rambler.
Now let's go back in time real quick. Back, let's say, 93, 94. How did you feel when you found out your debut album was selling a bunch of copies, and then you saw your video on MTV? How did that feel, man, you know?
Well, I mean, pretty... I guess when you start, when you're a kid, you're listening to your favorite bands and stuff, and, you know, your first concert is, you know, kind of the one that you remember most, and, you know, your entire life is music, and then all of a sudden, you know, Madonna calls you and says you've got a gold record. You know, it's kind of mind-blowing.
Wow.
Certainly brings things to perspective that, you know, maybe it is, you know, life is what you make it, and if you push yourself hard enough to find that dream and to believe that you're capable of anything, you certainly are. You know, there are a lot of obstacles that are in the way of that for a lot of people, and certainly for Candlebox, you know, being from Seattle was not only a help, but it was a hindrance, because we were a band that the city didn't really know. A lot of people didn't know who we were, because we were about 5 years in age younger than Chris Cornell and Eddie Vedder and Alice, the guys in Alice in Chains and stuff. So, you know, a lot. There's a lot of difference between a 21-year-old kid and a 17-year-old kid. You know, it certainly was our goal as a band was to, you know, sell a certain number of records, and you dream that you'll have a platinum record someday, but there's no real guarantee that that's going to happen. There are certain bands in Seattle that we were close friends with that we felt were better than us. A band called Sweetwater, a band called Green Apple Quickstep, that we felt were better than us, that maybe even deserved it more than we did, but never quite achieved. I don't even think sold 100,000 records. So, it was amazing for us. You know, I don't know if we handled it correctly, you know, because you know, with that success comes excess. But you know, we were obviously very, very happy and excited to have accomplished that. And to this day, you know, having a 4x platinum record hanging on your wall is no small feat. But yeah, it was pretty amazing to us.
Wow, that's so cool. So you've talked about how you've had to fight to gain respect on the Metallica 94 tour. Can you share some stories on that? Was it hard gaining respect, or what's going on there? What happened there?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, Metallica fans aren't happy to see anybody but Metallica.
Yeah.
And certainly Suicidal fans aren't happy to see anybody, you know, named Candlebox. You know, we were supposed to do that tour with Alice in Chains. It was supposed to be Suicidal Tendencies, Candlebox, Alice in Chains, Metallica. And Alice was going to be direct support. Lane was in rehab, so Alice pulled out of the tour. And at the time, Candlebox was selling around 125 to 150,000 records a week, which Metallica knew, you know, was guaranteeing a certain amount of sales of tickets. But they were also fans of the band. Lars and James were fans of Candlebox, and they liked our record. So we were asked by them to be direct support. And, you know, the fight really was to earn the respect of the audience. And, and of course, Suicidal Tendencies. You know, Mike Muir was not happy to be opening up for Candlebox. I never understood why he hated us so much, but, you know, he certainly made it clear to us that you know, we weren't welcome in his world. But you know, to each his own, and that's life. And you know, we did the tour. We had a, you know, an amazing time. You know, playing, I believe we played El Paso, Texas, didn't we, on that run? Or was it just Dallas and San Antonio? I can't recall. Yeah, I mean, in Albuquerque, you know, somebody threw a little fit to Jack Daniels bottle at me and split my head open. I mean, we got shit thrown at us every day in Sacramento. People were throwing shit at us, booed at me, and a Buddhist every show.
Really?
But, you know, I mean, that's, oh yeah, but you know, that's, listen, that's part of the, that's part of the course, opening for Metallica. Is, you know, it happened with Rush as well. When we opened for Rush, fans booed us every night, you know.
Oh, really?
But, you know, it's all part of making you who you are as a musician. It's character building.
Wow, what a horrible character building. Well, I mean, yeah, I understand. I mean, I'm a rock fan, a rock metal fan, and I won't throw a bottle up there. I understand it. I get it. You know, some people are more expressive than others, and you know. So I heard you're from San Antonio, well, not from San Antonio, but you spent a couple of years in San Antonio, right?
Well, yeah, I grew up there kind of the formative years of my life. So from 11 to 14,
okay,
kind of those, you know, puberty years and influential years, and certainly one of my favorite cities in the United States. Every time I come back to San Antonio, I really do feel like I'm home. Even Texas in general, just kind of, I have so many memories from those, you know, 4 years of my life that, you know, the changes and experiences I had, I'll never forget.
That's so cool. I'm in Texas too, so that's cool to know that a piece of Candlebox is from San Antonio. Right?
Yeah, man, yeah.
Let's go back to Pete Cornell. How did you meet Pete Cornell? And, of course, you wrote a song with him. So for how long have you known Pete?
I met Peter in Seattle, 1987, in 87, 88, he had a band called Inflatable Soul that I was a big fan of. Used to go see him play quite a bit. I knew his brother Chris, actually, before. I met Chris before I met Pete.
Yeah.
But we never really, we didn't play shows together or anything. So jump forward 25 years to the 25th anniversary of the debut album. We're doing two shows in Seattle at the Paramount Theater, and my manager is married to Pete now, Amy Decker. She's married to Peter, and he was at the show. We just started chatting and catching up on old times and sharing our thoughts about life and music and what had happened and how things were going. And I said, man, I would really love to have a song from you on my new record. I would just really love that. And he sent me this track acoustically, and I knew exactly what I wanted to do with it. It felt exactly how it feels right now, even though it was just acoustic. It had the same vibe, the same ass to it. And I was like, yeah, man, this is it. And I wrote the lyrics to it and sent him the pre-production demo that we did with the full band. He's like, that's exactly what I heard. And I knew that we were on something special. So it was really I guess it was 25 years of something, I guess unconsciously wanting it to happen with a fellow Seattle musician that I respected. It just kind of allowed itself to appear to, I think, both of us in that conversation we were having at the Paramount Theater about music. It just kind of said, you two are going to have something, and this is what it's going to be. And that, I think that happens with music a lot when you're conversing with a fellow musician. Songs are, floating around you all the time, and if you're aware of them and allow yourself to be aware of them, you can reel them in. And I think Keith Richards said something like that, at one point, where you can just kind of grab them out of thin air if you're conscious.
Now, how do you categorize Candlebox? I've heard it being labeled as grunge, and then just being labeled as straight out rock and roll or bluesy. How do you categorize Candlebox?
I think Candlebox is just a rock and roll band that's, got all sorts of influences, blues-based, punk-based, pop-based. We just pull from whatever inspires us, really. We don't limit ourselves to a certain style of music. And I think that's mainly because we've just grown over the years as musicians. We've become more acceptant of the influence that we have, and the influence that may be directed towards us as well from other bands and other musicians and songs that we love.
Okay, so give us your favorite Candlebox album.
Oh, that's a tough one.
Right? They're all good.
I have favorite songs on each record, but I think overall my favorite album to listen to is Disappearing Airports.
Nice.
Although I really like this new one a lot, there are certain things about it that I just feel kind of, maybe I'm a little bit insecure about them.
Okay.
So, which means I'm not sure how people are going to take them. Because there's some real honesty in these songs. Whereas Disappearing Airports is, I think from top to bottom, just musically, my favorite album.
Now that we're speaking of Disappearing Airports, why that title? What's behind that story?
That's the painting that's on the front of the record. That's that's what that painting was titled. I had asked a friend of mine, Scott Rivers Fisher, to paint something for the record. And in the second week of him creating something, he had a massive coronary heart attack and died. He was only 43 years old. His sister reached out to me and said, listen, there's this painting that he was inspired by that he had done called Disappearing Airports, which he used to listen, or he used to, when he would listen to your music, he always felt kind of represented the band and had all these kinds of different textures and things in it that he felt was like, God, I wish I could, utilize this painting. this album that they sent me, because we sent him the record to listen to paint to. And so she said, you know, he kind of felt that this actually represented the album more than what he started working on. And she sent it to me, and I said, you know, we'd be honored to put it on the album as the cover. So when you buy that record, whether you've got the vinyl or the CD, the first page of the lyric booklet tells the story behind the art, the artist himself, and his kind of influence not only on popular culture, but musically, the band that he was in, and his friendship with us as a band as well.
Oh, wow, what a story. Wow. Give us your favorite gig and your worst gig.
Oh, God.
That's a tough one.
Favorite gig, probably the first show we played with Rush, just because that was a dream come true.
Cool.
Worst gig? Oh, there's too many to count.
right.
We've had some bad ones. And it's usually the venue. You know, it's not the band's playing, it's the venue and lack of security. That's a tough one, man. I don't know if I could pinpoint, you know, one worst. I would just say that there's, you know, there's several on that list.
It happens. Yep. Would you like to send a message to the people listening to this podcast?
Yeah, thanks for listening. And you know, if you're looking for some Candlebox music, you may not know that, but there are, you know, six other records that we've released,
right,
over the years.
Great stuff, by the way. Great stuff.
Thank you. Yeah. No, but I mean, honestly, really just thanks so much for letting us do this for almost 30 years now coming up on.
Awesome. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you for making time. Keep rocking, and I guess we'll see you sometime in Texas soon.
Yeah. Thanks, brother. Appreciate it.
Support Candlebox. Support Mr. Kevin Martin. Support all of their efforts. Pre-order Wolves, which is their up-and-coming album, to be released, as we said, September 17th of 2021. So go ahead and find them. Go ahead and look online for CandleboxRocks.com, or search, you know, Candlebox out there on social media, or Kevin Martin for that matter. So don't forget to subscribe and ring that bell for notifications on YouTube, so that you guys can be aware and get notified when we upload some stuff. So thank you for your support from myself, James, and the staff here at That Metal Interview. And don't forget to keep it metal.
That Metal Interview.